Her clothes followed a heartbeat later. Then the door slammed. Like a pair of scissors through a taut ribbon, the memory was severed, the shield behind me fell, and I stumbled back, blinking. "Rule one," Reese told me, his eyes glazed with the rage of that memory. "Don't go into someone's mind unless you hold the way open. A Daemati might leave their minds spread wide for you and then shut you inside, turning you into their willing slave." A chill went down my spine at the thought, but what he'd shown me? "Rule two," he said, his face hard as stone. When was that?" I blurted. I knew him well enough not to doubt its truth. "When did that happen between you?" The ice remained in his eyes. "100 years ago, at the Court of Nightmares. I allowed her to visit after she'd begged for years, insisting she wanted to build ties between the Night Court and the priestesses. I'd heard rumors about her nature, but she was young and untried, and I hoped that perhaps a new High Priestess might indeed be the change her order needed. It turned out that she was already well-trained by some of her less benevolent sisters." I swallowed hard, my heart thundering. She didn't act that way at Lucien. Lucien had hated her, had made vague, vicious allusions to not liking her, to being approached by her. I was going to throw up. Had she pursued him like that? Had he been forced to say yes because of her position? And if I went back to the Spring Court one day, how would I ever convince Tamlin to dismiss her? What if, now that I was gone, she was... "Rule two," Reese finally went on. "Be prepared to see things you might not like." Only 50 years later, Amarantha had come, and done exactly to Reese what he'd wanted to kill Ianthe for. He'd let it happen to him, to keep them safe, to keep Azrael and Cassian from the nightmares that would haunt him forever, from enduring any more pain than what they'd suffered as children. I lifted my head to ask him more, but Reese had vanished. Alone, I peeled off my clothes, struggling with the buckles and straps he'd put on me. When had it been? An hour or two ago? It felt as if a lifetime had passed, and I was now a certified book tracker, it seemed. Better than a party-planning wife for breeding little high lords. What Ianthe had wanted to make me, to serve whatever agenda she had. The bath was indeed hot, as he'd promised, and I mulled over what he'd shown me, seeing that hand again and again reach between his legs, the ownership and arrogance in that gesture. I shut out the memory, the bathwater suddenly cold. Chapter 22. Word still hadn't come from the summer court the following morning, so Rhysand made good on his decision to bring us to the mortal realm. "What does one wear, exactly, in the human lands?" Moore said from where she sprawled across the foot of my bed. For someone who claimed to have been out drinking and dancing until the mother knew when, she appeared unfairly perky. Cassian and Azrael, grumbling and wincing over breakfast, had looked like they'd been run over by wagons, repeatedly. Some small part of me wondered what it would be like to go out with them, to see what Velaris might offer at night. I rifled through the clothes in my armoire. "Layers," I said. "They cover everything up. The décolletage might be a little daring depending on the event, but everything else gets hidden beneath skirts and petticoats and nonsense. Sounds like the women are used to not having to run. Or fight. I don't remember it being that way 500 years ago. I paused on an ensemble of turquoise with accents of gold, rich, bright, regal. Even with the wall, the threat of fairies remained, so surely practical clothes would have been necessary to run, to fight any that crept through. I wonder what changed. I pulled out the top and pants for her approval. Moore merely nodded, no commentary like Ianthe might have provided, no beatific intervention. I shoved away the thought and the memory of what she'd tried to do to Reese, and went on. "Nowadays, most women wed, bear children, and then plan their children's marriages. Some of the poor might work in the fields, and a few rare are mercenaries or hired soldiers, but the wealthier they are, the more restricted their freedoms and roles become. You'd think that money would buy you the ability to do whatever you pleased. Some of the high fae, Moore said, pulling at an embroidered thread in my blanket, are the same. I slipped behind the dressing screen to untie the robe I'd donned moments before she'd entered to keep me company while I prepared for our journey today. In the Court of Nightmares, she went on, that voice falling soft and a bit cold once more, females are prized. Our virginity is guarded, then sold off to the highest bidder. Whatever male will be of the most advantage to our families. I kept dressing, if only to give myself something to do while the horror of what I began to suspect slithered through my bones and blood. I was born stronger than anyone in my family, even the males, and I couldn't hide it because they could smell it, the same way you can smell a High Lord's heir before he comes to power. The power leaves a mark, an echo. When I was 12, before I bled, I prayed it meant no male would take me as a wife, that I would escape what my elder cousins had endured, loveless, sometimes brutal, marriages. I tugged my blouse over my head and buttoned the velvet cuffs at my wrists before adjusting the sheer turquoise sleeves into place. But then, I began bleeding a few days after I turned 17, and the moment my first blood came, my power awoke in full force, and even that goddamned mountain trembled around us. But, instead of being horrified, every single ruling family in the Hewn City saw me as a prize mare, saw that power, and wanted it bred into their bloodline, over and over again. What about your parents? I managed to say, slipping my feet into the midnight blue shoes. It'd be the end of winter in the mortal lands. Most shoes would be useless. Actually, my current ensemble would be useless, but only for the moments I'd be outside, bundled up. My family was beside themselves with glee. They could have their pick of an alliance with any of the other ruling families. My pleas for choice in the matter went unheard. She got out, I reminded myself. Moore got out, and now lived with people who cared for her, who loved her. The rest of the story, Moore said as I emerged, is long and awful, and I'll tell you some other time. I came in here to say, I'm not going with you to the mortal realm. Because of how they treat women? Her rich brown eyes were bright, but calm. When the queens come, I will be there. I wish to see if I recognize any of my long-dead friends in their faces. But I don't think I would be able to behave with any others. Did Rhys tell you not to go? I said tightly. No, she said, snorting. He tried to convince me to come, actually. He said I was being ridiculous. But Cassian, he gets it. The two of us wore him down last night. My brows rose a bit. Why they'd gone out and gotten drunk, no doubt, to ply their High Lord with alcohol. Moore shrugged at the unasked question in my eyes. Cassian helped Rhys get me out, before either had the real rank to do so. For Rhys, getting caught would have been a mild punishment, perhaps a bit of social shunning. But Cassian, he risked everything to make sure I stayed out of that court. And he laughs about it, but he believes he's a lowborn bastard, not worthy of his rank or life here. He has no idea that he's worth more than any other male I met in that court, and outside of it. Him and Asriel, that is. Yes. Asriel, who kept a step away, whose shadows trailed him and seemed to fade in her presence. I opened my mouth to ask about her history with him, but the clock chimed 10, time to go. My hair had been arranged before breakfast in a braided coronet atop my head, a small diadem of gold, flecked with lapis lazuli, set before it. Matching earrings dangled low enough to brush the sides of my neck, and I picked up the twisting gold bracelets that had been left out on the dresser, sliding one onto either wrist. Moore made no comment, and I knew that if I had worn nothing but my undergarments, she would have told me to own every inch of it. I turned to her. I'd like my sisters to meet you. Maybe not today, but if you ever feel like it. She cocked her head. I rubbed the back of my bare neck. I want them to hear your story, and know that there is a special strength. As I spoke, I realized I needed to hear it, know it, too. A special strength in enduring such dark trials and hardships, and still remaining warm and kind, still willing to trust and reach out. Moore's mouth tightened, and she blinked a few times. I went for the door, but paused with my hand on the knob. I'm sorry if I was not as welcoming to you as you were to me when I arrived at the night court. I'm trying to learn how to adjust. A pathetic, inarticulate way of explaining how ruined I'd become. But Moore hopped off the bed, opened the door for me, and said, There are good days and hard days for me, even now. Don't let the hard days win. Today, it seemed, would indeed be yet another hard day. With Rhys, Cassian, and Azriel ready to go, Amryn and Moore remaining in Valaris to run the city and plan our inevitable trip to Highburn, I was left with only one choice, who to fly with. Rhys would winnow us off the coast, right to the invisible line where the wall bisected our world. There was a tear in its magic about half a mile offshore, which we'd fly through. But standing in that hallway, all of them in their fighting leathers and me bundled in a heavy fur-lined cloak, I took one look at Rhys and felt those hands on my thighs again. Felt how it had been to look inside his mind, felt his cold rage, felt him defend himself, his people, his friends, using the power and masks in his arsenal. He'd seen and endured such unspeakable things, and yet his hands on my thighs had been gentle, the touch like... I didn't let myself finish the thought as I said, I'll fly with Azriel. Rhys and Cassian looked as if I'd declared I wanted to parade through Valaris in nothing but my skin, but the Shadow Singer merely bowed his head and said, Of course. And that, thankfully, was that. Rhys winnowed in Cassian first, returning a heartbeat later for me and Azriel. The Spymaster had waited in silence. I tried not to look too uncomfortable as he scooped me into his arms, those shadows that whispered to him stroking my neck, my cheek. Rhys was frowning a bit, and I just gave him a sharp look and said, Don't let the wind ruin my hair. He snorted, gripped Azriel's arm, and we all vanished into a dark wind. Stars and blackness, Azriel's scarred hands clenching tightly around me, my arms entwined around his neck, bracing, waiting, counting. Then blinding sunlight, roaring wind, a plunge down, down. Then we tilted, shooting straight. Azriel's body was warm and hard, though those brutalized hands were considerate as he gripped me. No shadows trailed us, as if he'd left them in Valaris. Below, ahead, behind, the vast blue sea stretched. Above, fortresses of clouds prodded along, and to my left, a dark smudge on the horizon. Land. Spring Court land. I wondered if Tamlin was on the western sea border. He'd once hinted about trouble there. Could he sense me, sense us, now? I didn't let myself think about it, not as I felt the wall. As a human, it had been nothing but an invisible shield. As a fairy, I couldn't see it, but I could hear it crackling with power, the tang of it coating my tongue. It's abhorrent, isn't it? Azriel said, his low voice nearly swallowed up by the wind. I can see why we were deterred for all these centuries, I admitted. Every heartbeat had us racing closer to that gargantuan, nauseating sense of power. You'll get used to it, the wording, he said, clinging to him so tightly I couldn't see his face. I watched the light shift inside the sapphire siphon instead, as if it were the great eye of some half-slumbering beast from a frozen wasteland. I don't really know where I fit in anymore, I admitted. Perhaps only because the wind was screeching around us, and Rhys had already winnowed ahead to where Cassian's dark form flew beyond the wall. I've been alive almost 5.5 centuries, and I'm not sure of that either, Azriel said. I tried to pull back to read the beautiful, icy face, but he tightened his grip, a silent warning to brace myself. How Azriel knew where the cleft was, I had no idea. It all looked the same to me. Invisible open sky. But I felt the wall as we swept through, felt it lunge for me, as if enraged we'd slipped past, felt the power flare and try to close that gap, but failing. Then we were out. The wind was biting, the temperature so cold it snatched the breath from me. That bitter wind seemed somehow less alive than the spring air we'd left behind. Asriel banked, veering toward the coastline, where Rhys and Cassian were now sweeping over the land. I shivered in my fur-lined cloak, clinging to Asriel's warmth. We cleared a sandy beach at the base of white cliffs, and a flat, snowy land dotted with winter-ravaged forests spread beyond them. The human lands. My home. Chapter 23. It had been a year since I had stalked through that labyrinth of snow and ice and killed a fairy with hate in my heart. My family's emerald-roofed estate was as lovely at the end of winter as it had been in the summer. A different sort of beauty, though. The pale marble seemed warm against the stark snow piled high across the land, and bits of evergreen and holly adorned the windows, the archways, and the lampposts. The only bit of decoration, of celebration, humans bothered with. Not when they'd banned and condemned every holiday after the war, all a reminder of their immortal overseers. 3 months with Amarantha had destroyed me. I couldn't begin to imagine what millennia with high fae like her might do, the scars it'd leave on a culture, a people, my people, or so they had once been. Hood up, fingers tucked into the fur-lined pockets of my cloak, I stood before the double doors of the house, listening to the clear ringing of the bell I'd pulled a heartbeat before. Behind me, hidden by Rhys's glamours, my three companions waited, unseen. I'd told them it would be best if I spoke to my family first, alone. I shivered, craving the moderate winter of Velaris, wondering how it could be so temperate in the far north, but everything in Prithian was strange. Perhaps when the wall hadn't existed, when magic had flowed freely between realms, the seasonal differences hadn't been so vast. The door opened, and a merry-faced round housekeeper, Mrs. Laurent, I recalled, squinted at me. "May I help?" The words trailed off as she noticed my face. With the hood on, my ears and crown were hidden, but that glow, that preternatural stillness, she didn't open the door wider. "I'm here to see my family," I choked out.
Your father is away on business, but your sisters..."
She didn't move. She knew. She could tell there was something different, something off. Her eyes darted around me. No carriage, no horse, no footprints through the snow. Her face blanched, and I cursed myself for not thinking of it.
"Mrs. Laurent?"
Something in my chest broke at Elaine's voice from the hall behind her. At the sweetness and youth and kindness, untouched by Prithian, unaware of what I'd done, become. I backed away a step. I couldn't do this, couldn't bring this upon them. Then Elaine's face appeared over Mrs. Laurent's round shoulder. Beautiful. She'd always been the most beautiful of us, soft and lovely, like a summer dawn. Elaine was exactly as I'd remembered her, the way I'd made myself remember her in those dungeons, when I told myself that if I failed, if Amarantha crossed the wall, she'd be next. The way she'd be next if the King of Highburn shattered the wall, if I didn't get the Book of Breathings. Elaine's golden brown hair was half up, her pale skin creamy and flushed with color, and her eyes, like molten chocolate, were wide as they took me in. They filled with tears and silently overran, spilling down those lovely cheeks. Mrs. Lauren didn't yield an inch. She'd shut this door in my face the moment I so much as breathed wrong. Elaine lifted a slender hand to her mouth as her body shook with a sob. "Elaine," I said hoarsely. Footsteps on the sweeping stairs behind them, then,
"Mrs. Laurent, draw up some tea and bring it to the drawing room."
The housekeeper looked to the stairs, then to Elaine, then to me, a phantom in the snow. The woman merely gave me a look that promised death if I harmed my sisters, as she turned into the house, leaving me before Elaine, still quietly crying. But I took a step over the threshold and looked up the staircase, to where Nesta stood, a hand braced on the rail, staring as if I were a ghost. The house was beautiful, but there was something untouched about it, something new compared to the age and worn love of Rhys's homes in Belarus. And seated before the carved marble sitting room hearth, my hood on, hands outstretched toward the roaring fire, I felt like they had let in a wolf, a wraith. I had become too big for these rooms, for this fragile mortal life, too stained and wild and powerful, and I was about to bring that permanently into their lives as well. Where Rhys, Cassian, and Asriel were, I didn't know. Perhaps they stood as shadows in the corner, watching. Perhaps they'd remained outside in the snow. I wouldn't put it past Cassian and Asriel to be now flying the grounds, inspecting the layout, making wider circles until they reached the village, my ramshackle old cottage, or maybe even the forest itself. Nesta looked the same, but older, not in her face, which was as grave and stunning as before, but in her eyes, in the way she carried herself. Seated across from me on a small sofa, my sisters stared and waited. I said, "Where is father?" It felt like the only safe thing to say. "In Neva," Nesta said, naming one of the largest cities on the continent, "trading with some merchants from the other half of the world, and attending a summit about the threat above the wall, a threat I wonder if you've come back to warn us about." No words of relief, of love, never from her. Elaine lifted her teacup.
"Whatever the reason, Feyre, we are happy to see you, alive. We thought you were..."
I pulled my hood back before she could go on. Elaine's teacup rattled in its saucer as she noticed my ears, my longer, slender hands, the face that was undeniably Fey. "I was dead," I said roughly. "I was dead, and then I was reborn. Remade." Elaine set her shivering teacup on the low-lying table between us. Amber liquid splashed over the side, pooling in the saucer. And as she moved, Nesta angled herself ever so slightly between me and Elaine. It was Nesta's gaze I held as I said, "I need you to listen." They were both wide-eyed, but they did. I told them my story. In as much detail as I could endure, I told them of Under the Mountain, of my trials and Amarantha. I told them about death and rebirth. Explaining the last few months, however, was harder, so I kept it brief. But I explained what needed to happen here, the threat Highburn posed. I explained what this house needed to be, what we needed to be, and what I needed from them. And when I finished, they remained wide-eyed, silent. It was Elaine who at last said,
You want other High Fae to come here, and the queens of the realm?
I nodded slowly. "Find somewhere else," Nesta said. I turned to her, already pleading, bracing for a fight. "Find somewhere else," Nesta said again, straight-backed. "I don't want them in my house, or near Elaine."
"Nesta, please," I breathed. "There is nowhere else. Nowhere I can go without someone hunting me, crucifying me.
And what of us? When the people around here learn we're Fae sympathizers, are we any better than the children of the Blessed, then? Any standing, any influence we have, gone. And Elaine's wedding."
"Wedding?" I blurted.
I hadn't noticed the pearl and diamond ring on her finger, the dark metal band glinting in the firelight. Elaine's face was pale, though, as she looked at it.
"In 5 months," Nesta said, "she's marrying a lord's son, and his father has devoted his life to hunting down your kind when they cross the wall."
"Your kind?
So there will be no meeting here," Nesta said, shoulders stiff. "There will be no Fae in this house."
"Do you include me in that declaration?" I said quietly. Nesta's silence was answer enough. But Elaine said,
"Nesta."
Slowly, my eldest sister looked at her.
"Nesta," Elaine said again, twisting her hands. If we do not help Feyre, there won't be a wedding. Even Lord Nolan's battlements and all his men couldn't save me from them.
Nesta didn't so much as flinch. Elaine pushed.
"We keep it secret. We send the servants away. With the spring approaching, they'll be glad to go home. And if Feyre needs to be in and out for meetings, she'll send word ahead, and we'll clear them out. Make up excuses to send them on holidays. Father won't be back until the summer anyway. No one will know.
She put a hand on Nesta's knee, the purple of my sister's gown nearly swallowing up the ivory hand.
Feyre gave and gave, for years. Let us now help her. Help others.
My throat was tight, and my eyes burned. Nesta studied the dark ring on Elaine's finger, the way she still seemed to cradle it. A lady, that's what Elaine would become, what she was risking for this. I met Nesta's gaze.
There is no other way.
Her chin lifted slightly. We'll send the servants away tomorrow.
Today, I pushed. We don't have any time to lose. Order them to leave now.
I'll do it,
Elaine said, taking a deep breath and squaring her shoulders. She didn't wait for either of us before she strode out, graceful as a doe. Alone with Nesta, I said,
Is he good? The Lord's son she's to marry?
She thinks he is. She loves him like he is.
And what do you think?
Nesta's eyes, my eyes, our mother's eyes, met mine. His father built a wall of stone around their estate so high, even the trees can't reach over it. I think it looks like a prison.
Have you said anything to her?
No. The son, Grayson, is kind enough, as smitten with Elaine as she is with him. It's the father I don't like. He sees the money she has to offer their estate, and his crusade against the Fae. But the man is old. He'll die soon enough.
Hopefully.
A shrug. Then Nesta asked,
Your High Lord,
you went through all that. She waved a hand at me, my ears, my body, and it still did not end well. I was heavy in my veins again.
That lord built a wall to keep the Fae out. My High Lord wanted to keep me caged in.
Why? He let you come back here all those months ago.
To save me, protect me, and I think what happened to him, to us, under the mountain, broke him.
Perhaps more than it had broken me.
The drive to protect at all costs, even my own well-being. I think he wanted to stifle it, but he couldn't. He couldn't let go of it.
There was much I still had to do, I realized, to settle things, settle myself. And now you are at a new court. Not quite a question, but I said, Would you like to meet them?
Chapter 24.
It took hours for Elaine to work her charm on the staff, to swiftly pack their bags and leave, each with a purse of money to hasten the process. Mrs. Laurent, though the last to depart, promised to keep what she'd seen to herself. I didn't know where Rhys, Cassian, and Azriel had been waiting, but when Mrs. Laurent had hauled herself into the carriage crammed with the last of the staff, heading down to the village to catch transportation to wherever they all had family, there was a knock on the door. The light was already fading, and the world outside was thick with shades of blue and white and gray, stained golden as I opened the front door and found them waiting. Nesta and Elaine were in the large dining room, the most open space in the house. Looking at Rhys, Cassian, and Azriel, I knew I'd been right to select it as the meeting spot. They were enormous, wild and rough and ancient. Rhys's brows lifted.
You'd think they'd been told plague had befallen the house.
I pulled the door open wide enough to let them in, then quickly shut it against the bitter cold. My sister Elaine can convince anyone to do anything with a few smiles. Cassian let out a low whistle as he turned in place, surveying the grand entry hall, the ornate furniture, the paintings, all of it paid for by Tamlin, initially. He'd taken such care of my family, yet his own. I didn't want to think about his family, murdered by a rival court for whatever reason no one had ever explained to me, not now that I was living amongst them. He'd been good. There was a part of Tamlin that was good. Yes, he'd given me everything I needed to become myself, to feel safe. And when he got what he wanted, he'd stopped. Had tried, but not really.
He'd let himself remain blind to what I needed after Amarantha.
Your father must be a fine merchant, Cassian said. I've seen castles with less wealth.
I found Rhys studying me, a silent question written across his face. I answered, My father is away on business, and attending a meeting in Neva about the threat of Prithian.
Prithian? Cassian said, twisting toward us. Not Highburn?
It's possible my sisters were mistaken. Your lands are foreign to them, they merely said above the wall. I assumed they thought it was Prithian. Asriel came forward on feet as silent as a cat's.
If humans are aware of the threat, rallying against it, then that might give us an advantage when contacting the Queens.
Rhys was still watching me, as if he could see the weight that had pressed into me since arriving here. The last time I'd been in this house, I'd been a woman in love. Such frantic, desperate love that I went back into Prithian. I went under the mountain as a mere human, as fragile as my sisters now seemed to me.
Come,
Rhys said, offering me a subtle, understanding nod before motioning to lead the way.
Let's make this introduction.
My sisters were standing by the window, the light of the chandeliers coaxing the gold in their hair to glisten. So beautiful, and young, and alive. But when would that change? How would it be to speak to them when I remained this way, while their skin had grown paper-thin and wrinkled, their backs curved with the weight of years, their white hands speckled? I would barely be into my immortal existence when theirs was wiped out like a candle before a cold breath. But I could give them a few good years, safe years, until then. I crossed the room, the three males a step behind, the wooden floors as shining and polished as a mirror beneath us. I had removed my cloak now that the servants were gone, and it was to me, not the Illyrians, that my sisters first looked. At the fey clothes, the crown, the jewelry. A stranger. This part of me was now a stranger to them. Then they took in the winged males, or two of them. Rhys's wings had vanished, his leathers replaced with his fine black jacket and pants. My sisters both stiffened at Cassian and Asriel, at those mighty wings tucked in tight to powerful bodies, at the weapons, and then at the devastatingly beautiful faces of all three males. Elaine, to her credit, did not faint, and Nesta, to hers, did not hiss at them. She just took a not-so-subtle step in front of Elaine and ducked her fisted hand behind her simple, elegant amethyst gown. The movement did not go unnoticed by my companions. I halted a good 4 feet away, giving my sisters breathing space in a room that had suddenly been deprived of all air. I said to the males, My sisters, Nesta and Elaine Archeron. I had not thought of my family name, had not used it for years and years, because even when I had sacrificed and hunted for them, I had not wanted my father's name, not when he sat before that little fire and let us starve, let me walk into the woods alone. I'd stopped using it the day I'd killed that rabbit and felt its blood stain my hands, the same way the blood of those fairies had married it years later like an invisible tattoo. My sisters did not curtsy. Their hearts wildly pounded, even Nesta's, and the tang of their terror coated my tongue. Cassian, I said, inclining my head to the left. Then I shifted to the right, grateful those shadows were nowhere to be found, as I said, Asriel, I half turned, and Rhysand, High Lord of the Night Court. Rhys had dimmed it too, I realized. The night rippling off him, the otherworldly grace and thrum of power. But looking in those star-flecked violet eyes, no one would ever mistake him for anything but extraordinary. He bowed to my sisters.
Thank you for your hospitality and generosity, he said with a warm smile, but there was something strained in it.
Elaine tried to return the smile, but failed, and Nesta just looked at the three of them, then at me, and said, The cook left dinner on the table. We should eat before it goes cold. She didn't wait for my agreement before striding off, right to the head of the polished cherry table. Elaine rasped, Nice to meet you, before hustling after her, the silk skirts of her cobalt dress whispering over the parquet floor. Cassian was grimacing as we trailed them,
Reese's brows were raised, and Asriel looked more inclined to blend into the nearest shadow and avoid this conversation altogether. Nesta was waiting at the head of the table, a queen ready to hold court. Elaine trembled in the upholstered carved wood chair to her left. I did them all a favor and took the one to Nesta's right. Cassian claimed the spot beside Elaine, who clenched her fork as if she might wield it against him, and Reese slid into the seat beside me, Asriel on his other side. A faint smile bloomed upon Asriel's mouth as he noticed Elaine's fingers white-knuckled on that fork, but he kept silent, focusing instead, as Cassian was subtly trying to do, on adjusting his wings around a human chair. Cauldron, damn me, I should have remembered, though I doubt either would appreciate it if I now brought in two stools. I sighed through my nose and yanked the lids off the various dishes and casseroles. Poached salmon with dill and lemon from the hothouse, whipped potatoes, roast chicken with beets and turnips from the root cellar, and some casserole of egg, game meat, and leeks. Seasonal food, whatever they had left at the end of the winter. I scooped food onto my plate, the sounds of my sisters and companions doing the same filling the silence. I took a bite and fought my cringe. Once, this food would have been rich and flavorful. Now it was ash in my mouth. Reese was digging into his chicken without hesitation. Cassian and Asriel ate as if they hadn't had a meal in months. Perhaps being warriors, fighting in wars, had given them the ability to see food as strength and put taste aside. I found Nesta watching me. "Is there something wrong with our food?" she said flatly. I made myself take another bite, each movement of my jaw an effort. "No?" I swallowed and gulped down a healthy drink of water. "So you can't eat normal food anymore? Or are you too good for it?" A question and a challenge. Reese's fork clanked on his plate. Elaine made a small distressed noise. And though Nesta had let me use this house, though she'd tried to cross the wall for me and we'd worked out a tentative truce, the tone, the disgust and disapproval. I laid my hand flat on the table. "I can eat, drink, fuck, and fight just as well as I did before. Better, even." Cassian choked on his water. Asriel shifted on his seat, angling to spring between us if need be. Nesta let out a low laugh, but I could taste fire in my mouth, hear it roaring in my veins, and a blind solid tug on the bond, cooling darkness sweeping into me, my temper, my senses, calming that fire. I scrambled to throw my mental shields up, but they were intact. Reese didn't so much as blink at me before he said evenly to Nesta, "If you ever come to Prithian, you will discover why your food tastes so different." Nesta looked down her nose at him. "I have little interest in ever setting foot in your land, so I'll have to take your word on it."
"Nesta, please,"
Elaine murmured. Cassian was sizing up Nesta, a gleam in his eyes that I could only interpret as a warrior finding himself faced with a new, interesting opponent. Then, mother above, Nesta shifted her attention to Cassian, noticing that gleam, what it meant. She snarled softly, "What are you looking at?" Cassian's brows rose, little amusement to be found now.
"Someone who let her younger sister risk her life every day in the woods while she did nothing. Someone who let a 14-year-old child go out into that forest, so close to the wall."
My face began heating, and I opened my mouth. To say what, I didn't know.
"Your sister died. Died to save my people. She is willing to do so again to protect you from war. So don't expect me to sit here with my mouth shut while you sneer at her for a choice she did not get to make, and insult my people in the process."
Nesta didn't bat an eyelash as she studied the handsome features, the muscled torso, then turned to me, dismissing him entirely. Cassian's face went almost feral, a wolf who had been circling a doe, only to find a mountain cat wearing its hide instead. Elaine's voice wobbled as she noted the same thing and quickly said to him,
It is very hard, you understand, to accept it."
I realized the dark metal of her ring. It was iron. Even though I had told them about iron being useless, there it was, the gift from her fey-hating, soon-to-be husband's family.
Elaine cast pleading eyes on Rhys, then Asriel, such mortal fear coating her features, her scent.
We are raised this way. We hear stories of your kind crossing the wall to hurt us. Our own neighbor, Claire Better, was taken, her family murdered.
A naked body spiked to a wall, broken, dead, nailed there for months. Rhys was staring at his plate, unmoving, unblinking. He had given Amarantha Claire's name, given it, despite knowing I'd lied to him about it. Elaine said,
It's all very disorienting.
I can imagine, Asriel said. Cassian flashed him a glare, but Asriel's attention was on my sister, a polite, bland smile on his face. Her shoulders loosened a bit. I wondered if Rhys's spymaster often got his information through stone-cold manners as much as stealth and shadows. Elaine sat a little higher as she said to Cassian,
And as for Feyre's hunting during those years, it was not Nesta's neglect alone that is to blame. We were scared and had received no training, and everything had been taken, and we failed her. Both of us.
Nesta said nothing, her back rigid. Rhys gave me a warning look. I gripped Nesta's arm, drawing her attention to me.
Can we just start over?
I could almost taste her pride roiling in her veins, barking to not back down. Cassian, damn him, gave her a taunting grin. But Nesta merely hissed, Fine, and went back to eating. Cassian watched every bite she took, every bob of her throat as she swallowed. I forced myself to clean my plate, aware of Nesta's own attention on my eating. Elaine said to Asriel, perhaps the only two civilized ones here,
Can you truly fly?
He sat down his fork, blinking. I might have even called him self-conscious. He said,
Yes. Cassian and I hail from a race of fairies called Illyrians. We're born hearing the song of the wind.
That's very beautiful, she said. Is it not frightening, though, to fly so high?
It is sometimes,
Asriel said. Cassian tore his relentless attention from Nesta long enough to nod his agreement.
If you are caught in a storm, if the current drops away. But we are trained so thoroughly that the fear is gone before we're out of swaddling.
And yet, Asriel had not been trained until long after that.
You get used to the wording,
he'd told me earlier. How often did he have to remind himself to use such words? Did we and our and us taste as foreign on his tongue as they did on mine?
You look like High Fae,
Nesta cut in, her voice like a honed blade. But you are not.
Only the High Fae who look like them, Cassian drawled, waving a hand to me and Rhys, are High Fae. Everyone else, any other differences, mark you as what they like to call lesser fairies.
Rhysand at last said,
It's become a term used for ease, but masks a long bloody history of injustices. Many lesser fairies resent the term, and wish for us all to be called one thing. Rightly so, Cassian said, drinking from his water.
Nesta surveyed me. But you were not High Fae, not to begin, so what do they call you? I couldn't tell if it was a jab or not. Rhys said,
Feyre is who she chooses to be.
Nesta now examined us all, raising her eyes to that crown, but she said, Write your letter to the queens tonight. Tomorrow, Elaine and I will go to the village to dispatch it. If the queens do come here, she added, casting a frozen glare at Cassian, I'd suggest bracing yourselves for prejudices far deeper than ours, and contemplating how you plan to get us all out of this mess, should things go sour.
We'll take that into account, Rhys said smoothly.
Nesta went on, utterly unimpressed by any of us. I assume you'll want to stay the night.
Rhys glanced at me in silent question.
We could easily leave, the males finding the way home in the dark, but too soon, perhaps, the world would go to hell. I said,
If it's not too much trouble, then yes, we'll leave after breakfast tomorrow.
Nesta didn't smile, but Elaine beamed.
Good. I think there are a few bedrooms ready.
We'll need two, Rhys interrupted quietly, next to each other, with two beds each.
I narrowed my brows at him.
Rhys explained to me. Magic is different across the wall, so our shields, our senses, might not work right. I'm taking no chances, especially in a house with a woman betrothed to a man who gave her an iron engagement ring. Elaine flushed a bit.
The bedrooms that have two beds aren't next to each other, she murmured.
I sighed. We'll move things around. It's fine. This one, I added with a glare in Reese's direction, is only cranky because he's old and it's past his bedtime. Rhys chuckled, Cassian's wrath slipping enough that he grinned, and Elaine, noticing Asriel's ease as proof that things weren't indeed about to go badly, offered one of her own as well. Nesta just rose to her feet, a slim pillar of steel, and said to no one in particular, "If we're done eating, then this meal is over." And that was that. Rhys wrote the letter for me, Cassian and Asriel chiming in with corrections, and it took us until midnight before we had a draft we all thought sounded impressive, welcoming, and threatening enough. My sisters cleaned the dishes while we worked, and had excused themselves to bed hours before, mentioning where to find our rooms. Cassian and Asriel were to share one, Rhys and I the other. I frowned at the large guest bedroom as Rhys shut the door behind us. The bed was large enough for two, but I wasn't sharing it. I whirled to him. I'm not— Wood thumped on carpet, and a small bed appeared by the door. Rhys plopped onto it, tugging off his boots.
Nesta is a delight, by the way.
She's her own creature, I said. It was perhaps the kindest thing I could say about her.
It's been a few centuries since someone got under Cassian's skin that easily. Too bad they're both inclined to kill the other.
Part of me shuddered at the havoc the two would wreak if they decided to stop fighting.
And Elaine, Rhys said, sighing as he removed his other boot, should not be marrying that lord's son, not for about a dozen reasons, the least of which being the fact that you won't be invited to the wedding. Though, maybe that's a good thing.
I hissed. That's not funny.
At least you won't have to send a gift, either. I doubt her father-in-law would deign to accept it.
You have a lot of nerve mocking my sisters when your own friends have equally as much melodrama. His brows lifted in silent question. I snorted. Oh, so you haven't noticed the way Asriel looks at Moore, or how she sometimes watches him, defends him, and how both of them do such a good job letting Cassian be a buffer between them most of the time? Rhys leveled a look at me.
I'd suggest keeping those observations to yourself.
You think I'm some busybody gossip? My life is miserable enough as it is. Why would I want to spread that misery to those around me as well?
Is it miserable? Your life, I mean.
A careful question. I don't know. Everything is happening so quickly that I don't know what to feel. It was more honest than I'd been in a while.
Perhaps once we return home, I should give you the day off.
How considerate of you, my lord. He snorted, unbuttoning his jacket. I realized I stood in all my finery, with nothing to wear to sleep. A snap of Rhys's fingers and my nightclothes, and some flimsy underthings, appeared on the bed.
I couldn't decide what scrap of lace I wanted you to wear, so I brought you a few to choose from.
Pig, I barked, snatching the clothes and heading to the adjoining bathing room. The room was toasty when I emerged, Rhys in the bed he'd summoned from wherever, all light gone save for the murmuring embers in the hearth. Even the sheets were warm as I slid between them.
Thank you for warming the bed, I said into the dimness.
His back was to me, but I heard him clearly as he said,
Amarantha never once thanked me for that.
Any warmth leached away. She didn't suffer enough. Not even close, for what she had done. To me, to him, to Claire, to so many others. Rhys didn't answer. Instead, he said,
I didn't think I could get through that dinner.
What do you mean? He'd been rather calm, contained.
Your sisters mean well, or one of them does, but seeing them, sitting at that table, I hadn't realized it would hit me as strongly, how young you were, how they didn't protect you.
I managed just fine.
We owe them our gratitude for letting us use this house, he said quietly.
But it will be a long while yet before I can look at your sisters without wanting to roar at them.
A part of me feels the same way, I admitted, nestling down into the blankets. But if I hadn't gone into those woods, if they hadn't let me go out there alone, you would still be enslaved, and perhaps Amarantha would now be readying her forces to wipe out these lands. Silence, then.
I am paying you a wage, you know, for all of this.
You don't need to, even if I had no money of my own.
Every member of my court receives one. There's already a bank account in Volaris for you, where your wages will be deposited, and you have lines of credit at most stores. So, if you don't have enough on you when you're shopping, you can have the bill sent to the house.
You didn't have to do that. I swallowed hard. And how much, exactly, am I getting paid each month?
The same amount the others receive.
No doubt a generous, likely too generous, salary. But he suddenly asked,
when is your birthday?
Do I even need to count them anymore? He merely waited. I sighed. It's the winter solstice. He paused.
That was months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't... I don't remember seeing you celebrate it.
Through the bond, through my unshielded mess of a mind. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want a party when there was already all that celebrating going on. Birthdays seem meaningless now, anyway. He was quiet for a long moment.
You were truly born on the winter solstice.
Is that so hard to believe? My mother claimed I was so withdrawn and strange because I was born on the longest night of the year. She tried one year to have my birthday on another day, but forgot to do it the next time. There was probably a more advantageous party she had to plan.
Now I know where Nesta gets it. Honestly, it's a shame we can't stay longer, if only to see who will be left standing, her or Cassian.
My money's on Nesta. A soft chuckle that snaked along my bones, a reminder that he'd once bet on me, had been the only one under the mountain who had put money on me defeating the Midengard worm. He said,
so's mine.
Chapter 25. Standing beneath the latticework of snow-heavy trees, I took in the slumbering forest and wondered if the birds had gone quiet because of my presence or that of the High Lord beside me.
Freezing my ass off first thing in the morning isn't how I intended to spend our day off,
Rhysand said, frowning at the wood.
I should take you to the Illyrian steppes when we return. The forest there is far more interesting, and warmer.
I have no idea where those are. Snow crunched under the boots Rhys had summoned when I declared I wanted to train with him, and not physically, but with the powers I had, whatever they were. You showed me a blank map that one time, remember?
Precautions.
Am I ever going to see a proper one, or will I be left to guess about where everything is?
You're in a lovely mood today, Rhys said, and lifted a hand in the air between us.
A folded map appeared, which he took his sweet time opening.
Lest you think I don't trust you, Feyre, darling.
He pointed to just south of the Northern Isles.
These are the steps. 4 days that way on foot.
He dragged a finger upward and into the mountains along the aisles.
We'll take you into Illyrian territory.
I took in the map, noted the peninsula jutting out about halfway up the western coast of the Night Court, and the name marked there, Volaris. He'd once shown me a blank one, when I had belonged to Tamlin and been little more than a spy and prisoner, because he'd known I'd tell Tamlin about the cities, their locations, that Ianthe might learn about it, too. I pushed back against that weight in my chest, my gut.
Here,
Rhys said, pocketing the map and gesturing to the forest around us.
We'll train here. We're far enough now.
Far enough from the house, from anyone else, to avoid detection or casualties. Rhys held out a hand, and a thick, stumpy candle appeared in his palm. He set it on the snowy ground.
Light it, douse it with water, and dry the wick.
I knew he meant without my hands. I can't do a single one of those things, I said. What about physical shielding? At least I'd been able to do some of that.
That's for another time. Today, I suggest you start trying some other facet of your power.
What about shapeshifting? I glared at him. Fire, water, and air it is. Bastard. Insufferable bastard. He didn't push the matter, thankfully. Didn't ask why shapeshifting might be the one power I'd never bothered to pull apart and master. Perhaps for the same reason I didn't particularly want to ask about one key piece of his history. Didn't want to know if Azrael and Cassian had helped when the Spring Court's ruling family had been killed. I looked Rhys over from head to toe. The Illyrian warrior garb, the sword over his shoulder, the wings, and that general sense of overwhelming power that always radiated from him. Maybe you should go.
Why? You seemed so insistent that I train you.
I can't concentrate with you around, I admitted, and go far. I can feel you from a room away. A suggestive curve shaped his lips. I rolled my eyes. Why don't you just hide in one of those pocket realms for a bit?
It doesn't work like that. There's no air there.
I gave him a look to say he should definitely do it then, and he laughed.
Fine. Practice all you want in privacy.
He jerked his chin at my tattoo.
Give a shout down the bond if you get anything accomplished before breakfast.
I frowned at the eye in my palm. What? Literally shout at the tattoo?
You could try rubbing it on certain body parts and I might come faster.
He vanished into nothing before I could hurl the candle at him. Alone in the frost-gilded forest, I replayed his words, and a quiet chuckle rasped out of me. I wondered if I should have tested out the bow and arrows I'd been given before asking him to leave. I hadn't yet tried out the Illyrian bow. Hadn't shot anything in months, actually. I stared at the candle. Nothing happened. An hour passed. I thought of everything that enraged me, sickened me, thought of Ianthe and her entitlement, her demands. Not even a wisp of smoke emerged. When my eyes were on the verge of bleeding, I took a break to scrounge through the pack I'd brought. I found fresh bread, a magically warmed canister of stew, and a note from Rhysand that said, "I'm bored. Any sparks yet?" Not surprisingly, a pen clattered in the bottom of the bag. I grabbed the pen and scribbled my response atop the canister, before watching the letter vanish right out of my palm. "No, you snoop. Don't you have important things to do?" The letter flitted back a moment later.
"I'm watching Cassian and Nesta get into it again over their tea. Something you subjected me to when you kicked me off training. I thought this was our day off."
I snorted and wrote back, "Poor baby High Lord, life is so hard." Paper vanished, then reappeared, his scribble now near the top of the paper, the only bit of clear space left.
"Life is better when you're around, and look at how lovely your handwriting is."
I could almost feel him waiting on the other side, in the sunny breakfast room, half paying attention to my eldest sister and the Illyrian warriors sparring. A faint smile curved my lips. "You're a shameless flirt," I wrote back. The page vanished. I watched my open palm, waiting for it to return. And I was so focused on it that I didn't notice anyone was behind me until the hand covered my mouth and yanked me clean off my feet. I thrashed, biting and clawing, shrieking as whoever it was hauled me up. I tried to shove away, snow churning around us like dust on a road, but the arms that gripped me were immovable, like bands of iron, and a rasping voice sounded in my ear. "Stop, or I snap your neck." I knew that voice. It prowled through my nightmares. The Ador. Chapter 26. The Ador had vanished in the moments after Amarantha died, suspected to have fled for the King of Highburn. And if it was here, in the mortal lands, I went pliant in its arms, buying a wisp of time to scan for something, anything to use against it.
"Good,"
it hissed in my ear.
"Now tell me."
Night exploded around us. The Ador screamed, screamed, as that darkness swallowed us up, and I was wrenched from its spindly, hard arms, its nails slicing into my leather. I collided face first with packed, icy snow. I rolled, flipping back, whirling to get my feet under me. The light returned as I rose into a crouch, knife angled. And there was Rhysand, binding the Ador to a snow-shrouded oak with nothing but twisting bands of night, like the ones that had crushed Ianthe's hand. Rhysand's own hands were in his pockets, his face cold and beautiful as death.
I'd been wondering where you slithered off to.
The Ator panted as it struggled against the bonds. Rhysand merely sent two spears of night shooting into its wings. The Ador shrieked as those spears met flesh and sank deep into the bark behind it.
Answer my questions, and you can crawl back to your master, Rhys said, as if he were inquiring about the weather.
Whore,
the Ador spat. Silvery blood leaked from its wings, hissing as it hit the snow. Rhys smiled.
You forget that I rather enjoy these things.
He lifted a finger. The Ator screamed,
No!
Rhys's finger paused.
I was sent,
it panted,
to get her.
Why?
Rhys asked with that casual, terrifying calm.
That was my order. I am not to question. The king wants her.
My blood went as cold as the woods around us.
Why?
Rhys said again. The Ator began screaming, this time beneath the force of a power I could not see. I flinched.
Don't know, don't know, don't know.
I believed it.
Where is the king currently?
Highburn.
Army?
Coming soon.
How large?
Endless. We have allies in every territory, all waiting.
Rhys cocked his head as if contemplating what to ask next. But he straightened, and Azrael slammed into the snow, sending it flying like water from a puddle. He'd flown in so silently, I hadn't even heard the beat of his wings. Cassian must have stayed at the house to defend my sisters. There was no kindness on Azrael's face as the snow settled, the immovable mask of the High Lord's Shadow Singer. The Ador began trembling, and I almost felt bad for it as Azrael stalked for him. Almost, but didn't. Not when these woods were so close to the chateau, to my sisters. Rhys came to my side as Azrael reached the Ador.
The next time you take her,
Rhys said to the Ador,
I kill first, ask questions later.
Azrael caught his eye. Rhys nodded. The siphons atop his scarred hands flickered like rippling blue fire as he reached for the Ador. Before the Ador could scream, it and the spymaster vanished. I didn't want to think about where they'd go, what Azrael would do. I hadn't even known Azrael possessed the ability to winnow, or whatever power he'd channeled through his siphons. He'd let Rhys winnow us both in the other day, unless the power was too draining to be used so lightly.
Will he kill him? I said, my puffs of breath uneven. No.
I shivered at the raw power glazing his taut body.
We'll use him to send a message to Highburn, that if they want to hunt the members of my court, they'll have to do better than that.
I started, at the claim he'd made of me, and at the words.
You knew?
You knew he was hunting me.
I was curious who wanted to snatch you the first moment you were alone.
I didn't know where to start. So Tamlin was right about my safety, to some degree. It didn't excuse anything. So you never planned to stay with me while I trained. You used me as bait.
Yes, and I'd do it again. You were safe the entire time.
You should have told me.
Maybe next time.
There will be no next time. I slammed a hand into his chest, and he staggered back a step from the strength of the blow. I blinked. I'd forgotten that strength in my panic, just like with the Weaver. I'd forgotten how strong I was.
Yes, you did.
Rhysand snarled, reading the surprise on my face, that icy calm shattering.
You forgot that strength, and that you can burn and become darkness and grow claws. You forgot. You stopped fighting.
He didn't just mean the Ador or the Weaver. And the rage rose up in me in such a mighty wave that I had no thought in my head but wrath at myself, what I'd been forced to do, what had been done to me, to him.
So what if I did?
I hissed and shoved him again. So what if I did? I went to shove him again, but Rhys winnowed away a few feet. I stormed for him, snow crunching underfoot. It's not easy. The rage ran me over, obliterated me. I lifted my arms to slam my palms into his chest, and he vanished again. He appeared behind me, so close that his breath tickled my ear as he said, "You have no idea how not easy it is." I whirled, grappling for him. He vanished before I could strike him, pound him. Rhys appeared across the clearing, chuckling. "Try harder." I couldn't fold myself into darkness and pockets, and if I could turn myself into smoke, into air and night and stars, I'd use it to appear right in front of him and smack that smile off his face. I moved, even if it was futile, even as he rippled into darkness, and I hated him for it, for the wings and ability to move like mist on the wind. He appeared a step away, and I pounced, hands out, talons out, and slammed into a tree. He laughed as I bounced back, teeth singing, talons barking as they shredded through wood. But I was already lunging as he vanished, lunging like I could disappear into the folds of the world as well, track him across eternity. And so I did. Time slowed and curled, and I could see the darkness of him turn to smoke and veer as if it were running for another spot in the clearing. I hurtled for that spot, even as I felt my own lightness, folding my very self into wind and shadow and dust, the looseness of it radiating out of me, all while I aimed for where he was headed. Rhysand appeared, a solid figure in my world of smoke and stars, and his eyes were wide, his mouth split in a grin of wicked delight as I winnowed in front of him and tackled him into the snow. Chapter 27. I panted, sprawled on top of Rhys in the snow while he laughed hoarsely. "Don't," I snarled into his face. "Ever." I pushed his rock-hard shoulders, talons curving at my fingertips. "Use me as bait again." He stopped laughing. I pushed harder, those nails digging in through his leather. "You said I could be a weapon. Teach me to become one. Don't use me like a pawn. And if being one is part of my work for you, then I'm done. Done." Despite the snow, his body was warm beneath me, and I wasn't sure I'd realized just how much bigger he was until our bodies were flush, too close, much, much too close. Rhys cocked his head, loosening a chunk of snow clinging to his hair. "Fair enough." I shoved off him, snow crunching as I backed away. My talons were gone. He hoisted himself up onto his elbows. "Do it again. Show me how you did it." "No." The candle he'd brought now lay in pieces, half buried under the snow. "I want to go back to the chateau." I was cold and tired, and his face turned grave. "I'm sorry." I wondered how often he said those two words. I didn't care. I waited while he uncoiled to his feet, brushing the snow off him, and held out a hand. It wasn't just an offer. "You forgot," he'd said. I had. "Why does the King of Highburn want me? Because he knows I can nullify the cauldron's power with the book?" Darkness flickered, the only sign of the temper Rhysand had once again leashed. "That's what I'm going to find out." "You stopped fighting." "I'm sorry," he repeated, hand still outstretched. "Let's eat breakfast, then go home." "Valaris isn't my home." I could have sworn hurt flashed in his eyes before he spirited us back to my family's house. Chapter 28. My sisters ate breakfast with Rhys and me, Asriel gone to wherever he'd taken the Ador. Cassian had flown off to join him the moment we returned. He'd given Nesta a mocking bow, and she'd given him a vulgar gesture I hadn't realized she knew how to make. Cassian had merely laughed, his eyes snaking over Nesta's ice-blue gown with a predatory intent that, given her hiss of rage, he knew would set her spitting. Then he was gone, leaving my sister on the broad doorstep, her brown-gold hair ruffled by the chill wind stirred by his mighty wings. We brought my sisters to the village to mail our letter, Rhys glamoring us so we were invisible while they went into the little shop to post them. After we returned home, our goodbyes were quick. I knew Rhys wanted to return to Valaris, if only to learn what the Ador was up to. I'd said as much to Rhys while he flew us through the wall, into the warmth of Prithian, then winnowed us to Valaris. Morning mist still twined through the city and the mountains around it. The chill also remained, but not nearly as unforgiving as the cold of the mortal world. Rhys left me in the foyer, huffing hot air into my frozen palms, without so much as a goodbye. Hungry again, I found Nuala and Caradwyn, and I gobbled down cheese and chive scones while thinking through what I'd seen, what I'd done. Not an hour later, Rhys found me in the living room, my feet propped on the couch before the fire, a book in my lap, a cup of rose tea steaming on the low table before me. I stood as he entered, scanning him for any sign of injury. Something tight in my chest eased when I found nothing amiss.
"It's done," he said, dragging a hand through his blue-black hair. "We learned what we needed to."
I braced myself to be shut out, to be told it'd be taken care of, but Rhys added,
"It's up to you, Feyre, to decide how much of our methods you want to know about, what you can handle. What we did to the Ador wasn't pretty."
"I want to know everything," I said. "Take me there."
"The Ador isn't in Valaris. He was in the Hewn City, in the Court of Nightmares, where it took Azrael less than an hour to break him."
I waited for more, and, as if deciding I wasn't about to crumple, Rhys stalked closer, until less than a foot of the ornate red carpet lay between us. His boots, usually impeccably polished, that was silver blood speckled on them. Only when I met his gaze did he say,
"I'll show you."
I knew what he meant, and steadied myself, blocking out the murmuring fire and the boots and the lingering cold around my heart. Immediately, I was in that antechamber of his mind, a pocket of memory he'd carved for me. Darkness flowed through me, soft and seductive, echoing up from an abyss of power so great it had no end and no beginning.
"Tell me how you tracked her," Azrael said, in the quiet voice that had broken countless enemies. I, Rhys, leaned against the far wall of the holding cell, arms crossed. Azrael crouched before where the Ador was chained to a chair in the center of the room. A few levels above, the Court of Nightmares reveled on, unaware their High Lord had come. I'd have to pay them a visit soon, remind them who held their leash. Soon. But not today, not when Feyre had winnowed, and she was still pissed as hell at me. Rightly so, if I was being honest. But Azrael had learned that a small enemy force had infiltrated the North 2 days ago, and my suspicions were confirmed. Either to get at Tamlin or at me, they wanted her, maybe for their own experimenting. The Ator let out a low laugh.
"I received word from the King, that's where you were. I don't know how he knew. I got the order, flew to the wall as fast as I could."
Azrael's knife was out, balanced on a knee. Truth Teller, the name stamped in silver Illyrian runes on the scabbard. He'd already learned that the Ador and a few others had been stationed on the outskirts of the Illyrian territory. I was half tempted to dump the Ador in one of the war camps and see what the Illyrians did to it. The Ador's eyes shifted toward me, glowing with a hatred I'd become well accustomed to.
"Good luck trying to keep her, High Lord,"
Azrael said.
"Why?"
People often made the mistake of assuming Cassian was the wilder one, the one who couldn't be tamed. But Cassian was all hot temper, temper that could be used to forge and weld. There was an icy rage